here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Good morning, and welcome to episode 26. Today, I'm excited to have a good chat with Jenny Shaw, founder of Social Wellness Co. Founded in 2019, Social Wellness Co. is a small-scale boutique social media and content management company located in Sarnia, Ontario, that specializes in digital content for health brands, wellness entrepreneurs, and business coaches. With a focus on social media and digital marketing strategies, campaign planning, recipe development, food photography, and copywriting. Jenny, welcome to the show.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, good. How are things over in Sarnia today?
They're all right. It's sunny and nice, and hopefully summer is kicking in.
Yeah, definitely. It's kicking in over here. So it's been a little slow to the start of the year for you, has it been?
Yeah, it's been okay. We had a really warm April and then it cooled down. And now I live in on a beach city. So
yeah,
we're excited for the beach.
Yeah, no, definitely. I looked you up on the map. So you're right on the border there, just past London, Ontario.
Yes. Yeah. We're Southwestern Ontario, like a 5-minute drive to the States.
Yeah.
If we can ever cross that bridge again. But yeah, super close.
I've only been as far as Buffalo. Well, I went into Buffalo, so across the border, but we got married in Niagara on the Lake back in 2015, which was beautiful. But my wife went to college in London, actually. So,
cool.
Yeah. My wife's Canadian. She's from up in the Kawarthas. And we've got a sister-in-law that lives in Toronto as well. So yeah, we love that part of the world.
Yeah, it's good. Toronto's fine. I think soon I should be popping up there quite frequently. So.
Oh yeah? Yeah, just with work or other things in life?
Yeah, with work, with the other company that I own, we do a lot of pop-up markets for small businesses. And like my friends are all there. So we did spend a lot of time in Toronto, and now it's like just waiting for things to open back up.
Yeah.
Knock wood.
I hear you. So you're married. You've got a little daughter. How old's your daughter?
She's 5.
5?
Yeah.
That's such a fun age, hey?
Yeah, she's super cute. Luckily right now, because Ontario's still in lockdown.
Yeah.
Lockdown for a while. But luckily right now, my mom isn't working. So she has her every single day, which is really nice because it's given me flexibility. I know a lot of parents don't have that right now, so
it's tough.
I feel lucky. She's having fun. She used to play with Nana all day. Nana spoils her.
Yeah,
you know.
Of course. Yeah, no, I heard that your lockdown got pushed to, was it early June 2nd, I think. Yeah, that was announced a couple of days ago. Yeah, we feel for you. Like I said before, my sister-in-law both my sister-in-laws are in Toronto, and they've got 2 young kids as well. And yeah, homeschooling and the whole 9 yards. So it's a lot for everybody at the moment. How has it been on you, like managing and operating a business and being a mum? Tell us all a little bit about that.
It's like, so I've been lucky having my mum available.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship is, it's like so intense, right? So jam-packed days, and then trying to balance motherhood on top of it is very, it's a lot of energy, and you have to find that flexibility, and you have to find that balance, and you just have to find ways to say no to like all of the things that come into your brain at once. But I do have a lot of help. I have a lot of support. My husband's also an entrepreneur, so like it's just there, and like we figure it out. And it's just a lot of like taking it one day at a time and on the fly.
Absolutely. What does your husband do?
It's a good question. He is in renovations.
Right.
So he owns a renovation company, but we're looking to shift out of that. And he is now getting into furniture making.
Oh,
so
great.
It's like, yeah. His retirement plan, he just wants to make furniture, but really high-end, nice, bespoke furniture.
Beautiful.
Yeah, made with like, well, if wood prices ever come down, I don't know what's going to happen there, but
yeah.
Pretty extravagant right now.
Yeah, I was actually talking about it on my last podcast, but my father-in-law, he was an upholsterer and he did the most ornate, beautiful, detailed work. And yeah, just incredible. Like the detail that he went into with his timber work and just the fabrics that he used was just incredible. And yeah, so it's definitely an art form, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'd imagine that you'd be able to leverage all of your social media skills to give him a great platform to get all of his business out there as well. So you'll be able to work hand in hand.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yep. They do. It goes, his entrepreneur mind goes well with like my digital marketing knowledge. So
you guys, yeah, you're lucky to have each other in that respect.
Yeah.
Cool. So listen, thanks for taking the time to come onto the show today. I was really interested to have you on because I was yet to have a social media and digital marketing strategist come onto the show. And as we know, it's such a key ingredient to any successful business. And I felt that you're the perfect person to have this conversation with because you specifically work with health brands and wellness entrepreneurs. So tell us a little bit about what you do at Social Wellness Co. and where it started and where it all began.
For sure. So we are a boutique content marketing agency with the sole focus on social media management.
Yep.
However, that being said, content marketing, as many of you brands already know, it is more than just like the social element. It's about telling that story and taking your customers on a journey from each piece of content to the next. So we specialize in social, but we also do things like blog, email, video, photos, like the whole shebang. I ended up getting started in this industry. I actually have a background in advertising. Didn't pursue it because when I went to school for advertising, it was traditional marketing and it just wasn't my thing. I actually left my course thinking I'm not going to do anything with this. Years go by. I ended up studying holistic nutrition. When I got out of school, somehow got into the blogging world, started with food photography and wellness product promotion, blogging and writing. It was like heavy in content, the content side of things. Mm-hmm. And I was running that platform. We built a successful blog. It was a profitable blog. Ran that platform with a friend and we decided to sell it. So we ended up selling it right on the brink of COVID. And as we were selling it, I ended up freelancing as a social media manager. So from there, I took all of the knowledge that I had learned with building a blog, which was essentially going back to school for advertising. Mm-hmm. And I just applied it to working one-on-one with health brands. I work with a lot of health and wellness software companies, as well as food brands. Mm-hmm. And yeah, from there, I've just managed to naturally grow this little content marketing shop. And I love it. It's like, it's exactly where I fit in life, which is really cool. And I feel very lucky.
Yeah, good for you. So tell us a little bit about the business that you built and sold, the blogging business. So how did you create revenue from that side of the business? And like, I'd just love to know, like, I didn't realize that there were people out there buying blogs.
So we had revenue from product promotion. So the thing about blogging is that you have to have the traffic, you have to have the social numbers, you have to have the eyeballs on the account in order for a brand to justify doing a product promotion for you. So it's like influencing, like influencers, but in the blogging world. Mm-hmm. You also make money from like Mediavine or whatever, the ad platform that you work with. Yeah. And you know, you get revenue from every hit that goes to that ad. So I think we used Flip It. It's an online buying platform specifically for websites.
Right.
And the value could come from like our Alexa ranking. And Alexa is essentially you grow, there's validity to your online website to Google.
Right.
And whatever Google puts your global ranking at, if it's a strong ranking, then when you sell your blog, they deem it as value so that you can get other people to like backlink to your website and all of these things is really good for SEO. So that's how that kind of happened. It was really weird when we were thinking about giving it up. we were like, should we just let it go? And like, you know, it was an amazing learning experience. And my ex-business partner was like, you know what, let's just try to sell it. And I was like, all right, there's like no harm. And yeah, we found the website and a girl in New York bought it. And like, wow. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's she doing with it now?
I think the same thing. I'm not 100% sure. She took it in a different direction. It wasn't like how we had built it. So I kind of like disconnected from it because when you build a business and then somebody else takes it over, it's like really hard to like accept the fact that they're not doing what you did in the past. So I like had to disconnect from it. So I didn't like get irritated by it. But yeah, I think she's still just doing like product promotion, probably a lot of SEO work and probably just like backlinking and getting paid for it.
Assuming. It's a whole other world out there, isn't it? Where did you get your start in that? Did you sort of like have to learn on the go, or did you have a mentor or somebody that you looked up to, or where did you gather all of the pieces to be able to build this engine?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much how it went. We, like I had advertising background experience. And when I went to school for advertising, I was in the creative department. So it was either I was going to be streamlined into, copyright or graphic design. And I think that like connection to the copy and the branding and all of those elements helped us build the platform. But everything, like we took blogging courses, we took SEO courses, we took photography courses. It was, like I said, it was like a school. Like we took it from the ground up, and it was my education. I basically invested in my education, teaching myself how to do it, which led me into this career of social media marketing, which is kind of cool.
And it paid for itself.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And from day one to the day that you sold it, what was that time frame?
So we started blogging in 2015.
Yeah.
So it was like 4 years. I'd say the first 2 years were like a lot of trial and error. We weren't making any money. We built the platform, and then by 2017 we probably started generating a revenue from that, and then sold it in 2019, right? Like I think we sold it in April. So it was right on the cusp of COVID, which was kind of lucky.
Perfect timing. Yeah And I guess it's like any business, like the first couple of years are sort of you're grinding it out and you're working your butt off and you don't necessarily see a lot of rewards. But did you find that from the moment you started to generate some revenue, it sort of really took off? Was it slow momentum or fast momentum, I guess is what I'm asking.
I think it was just steady. With the blogging industry, it's like a full-time job. So I just had my kid when we started it. So I didn't have like all of the attention into the platform as needed to be there. And then also you have to kind of like hustle a little bit for these promotions. Like you have to do a lot of pitching, a lot of this, a lot of that. Sometimes the time isn't right, whatever. So I think probably around like 2018-ish, we started to get known a little bit in the, nutrition community. We had built a community ourselves of like 50,000 people. So there were brands reaching out to us to have the promotion. And I think now it's a lot different because that was just kind of on the cusp of like when influencers were starting to kind of come to the scene and where brands were starting to realize that, oh, influencers are like a really great way to get my product out into the world. So we weren't getting as many connections as like what you might get now if you have a successful platform. But again, like things also change so much in the influencer world. So it's like, it's really interesting. But yeah, I would say it was pretty steady.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So you took everything that you learned from your first business and you've applied it to Social Wellness Co. Tell us a little bit about Social Wellness Co. in particular. Like you've just sort of gone over all of the pieces of the puzzle that you sort of implement with your clients. But I guess, you know, there are so many critical moving pieces required to operate a successful business, and you've got to have great quality product and branding and packaging for shelf appearance and distribution to get you there, and really a great understanding of who you're targeting and how to find them, right? So as a food-based CBG business. And then, you know, you can't forget about all of the back of house operations like bookkeeping. So what I find is when I'm talking to a lot of these entrepreneurs and small business owners that come onto the podcast, they're spread very, very thin. So in your opinion, when should they start focusing on their digital marketing strategy? and presence? And at what point is it optimal to start working with an agency just like you at Social Wellness?
That's a really good question. And I feel like the answer would probably come in the form of what kind of capital you have raised versus if you're just starting and you don't have the funds to back you. Like, I know there's a lot of amazing food brands that are hitting the market right now, and they have been lucky enough to generate, you know, capital or whatever. And then if that is the case, the marketing piece of the puzzle is like integral to your success. If you want to go from zero to, I don't know, half a million or a million in revenue in 1 year, right? Whereas like, if you're just starting small, say, with my other company, we deal with a lot of like very small women-based businesses that their operations are out of their basement. And like, you know, there's their packaging isn't quite there yet, or they're just like a brand beginning and like trying to figure it all out. And maybe they just don't have the funds to like, have somebody to support them through that process. And then I would probably say like, invest in your brand in the beginning, like get somebody to do your website, make sure it's like professionally done, like spend the money on branding to start off with, because like developing a strong brand and a strong visual presence, like you can maybe as an entrepreneur that doesn't have the capital to like back you with marketing costs, you can maybe like do it yourself for a little while until like, you know, you kind of get a little bit more traction with your business and then you can justify the cost. But like that branding element is like so integral. So like, if you are going to start somewhere and you are going to invest and you don't have money to invest, like at least do it in your website and at least do it like in packaging, in logo, in like that brand experience, the story that you develop, and work with somebody to do it. Because as much as we think we know so much about our brand and as much as we can like do the elevator pitch, when you actually put it all on paper, there's so many pieces that you might miss out on that having like an expert to support the brand process is like just amazing. It's like it pays for itself. So
yeah, I hear you. And you know, you're sort of verifying everything that a lot of the people that have come onto this show, whether it's Eve from Eve's Crackers or Sarah from Chiwis, or you know, oh, I mean, you name it. You've got Jordan from Sriracha Revolver. And then last week I just had Ben Dadier from Pretty Ugly Design, who is also a designer that just does the most exquisite work as well. And everybody, just like yourself, says you've got to invest in your brand up front. And, you know, it might not be from day one, just as you have suggested, but it's something that you've just got to get sorted out pretty quickly just to get in line with who your targeted audience is and the way that you want your brand represented out there, especially on the retail shelf. But you know, as we were just suggesting, digital is just so critical these days. You just mentioned the customer journey. So can you talk to us a little bit about what it means or what the customer journey means through the lens of like a digital footprint?
Yeah, for sure. So customer journey, you're essentially popping into the mind of who your ideal client is and who your ideal customer is, and then figuring out how to talk to them as they experience your content piece by piece. So for example, like maybe an influencer has tagged your brand in their stories, and then their audience has now experienced that piece of content, has hit your feed, and they're seeing your entire feed. So that could, that like that visual process right there could either make or break whether or not they follow you, whether or not they want to learn more about your product, whether or not they want to stick around. And then once they hit your feed, maybe they engage with another piece of content. It could be one of the first three pieces of content that you have on your feed, or it could be your Instagram stories. It could be whatever. Or it could be simply that they're clicking on your website straight away. And now you have like a lead in to the next piece of content that they're going to experience, which is your website, or which is the copy on that feed post. Or, you know, maybe they've posted a TikTok video into their Instagram stories, and then they're guided to your TikTok account. Like it's just this journey and the story that you're telling and how all of these pieces kind of join forces to create this like amazing digital experience. And that's the customer journey. And the goal, the end goal, is not to just have pretty content, but it is to convert these people to long-term, lifelong buyers and customers, which is where the content marketing comes into place, because that is, you know, those are the pieces we put together, and that's the journey that we really want your clients to experience to make that decision to say, hey, I love this product and I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. Essentially, it's just all funnels, isn't it? And, yeah. But you know, the vast majority of people, you'd be, where do you find they sort of first have their touch point? Is it all on social media these days?
Probably, yeah. My guess, TikTok. So I attended Ad World last week. I don't know. It's Michael Stelzner. He's like a big ad guy, right. But, it was this digital ad conference, and like everything that is being talked about right now are email, TikTok,
yeah,
and Facebook ads. Yeah. So they're not even talking about Instagram anymore. Wow. In like these ad conferences. I mean, it is there, but there were not even one single speaking event that was Instagram specific. Wow. It's about building customer, building your communities, TikTok, 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 and how you're making an impact with your Facebook ads. So I'd say that those are maybe probably the key places, and influencer marketing, of course, but yeah.
Wow, TikTok's blowing up, isn't it? I remember Gary Vee mentioned TikTok a while ago, and he's like, this has to be on everybody's radar. And a lot of people got on it early, and they're just seeing huge, huge volume coming through their that TikTok platform. But there's a girl that I follow, or a woman, I should say, on LinkedIn called Erica Rankin, who's got Brodo. Are you aware of Erica?
Yeah, I was just thinking about Brodo because she has a TikTok account. And yeah, like I think... She posted something about how she had 20,000 followers. By the time I looked at it, she had 40,000 followers. And like, that's why TikTok is just amazing. It's like, it doesn't compare to anything else, because it's also that social platform where you don't have to be perfect. Like you can let go of perfectionism. You can let go of rules. You do have to play by the algorithm. And there are some like tips and strategies, but at the end of the day, people just want to see real people doing fun things. Which makes it so awesome. And it's just a fun place to be. So,
yeah. And, you know, so I'm in my mid 30s, and Instagram is sort of the world that I live in right now, and a little bit of Facebook, and TikTok's not even on my radar, and it should be. And I think there are a lot of people in my sort of boat that are looking at TikTok as something that a lot of younger people are using. But what kind of demographic is it sort of reaching out to, and how is it sort of relevant for CPG businesses, and in what way can you see them leveraging that tool to generate some, either great like experiences to draw people into their brand, or even generate some B2C revenue?
So TikTok actually just did a huge marketing campaign for the brand TikTok, and they just funneled in millions of dollars to make it not a younger demographic based social media network. And especially with COVID and everybody just stuck at home, not knowing what to do and needing like that dopamine fix, TikTok has gone from being for Gen Z to being for millennials plus. Mm. And the cool thing about it is that the way the algorithm works is that it strictly feeds you and funnels you content based off of what your like engagement habits are like. So for me, my husband has ADHD, so I'm on ADHD talk. I like rocks. I've been into like rock collecting lately, so I'm on like rock talk. I don't even know what it's called. Like I get funneled ADHD and rock content to my like personal For You page. And it's just like the stuff I want to see, right?
Yep.
So when it comes to your brand and building out a TikTok account, you can really, really, really make an impact with your customers in a couple ways. Way one is by putting out just information. Like if you don't feel comfortable with doing all the trends and like the music and like bouncing around and dancing, a huge component of TikTok right now is putting out informational posts, whether it's statistics. You know, there's like a lot of financial advisors on TikTok. There's a lot of, you know, doctors. There's a ton of like medical resources on TikTok. I see a lot of dermatologists, stuff like that. So if it's like an information-based platform, you'll reach people by making sure that you're providing a lot of value within that minute of content in like an informational session. Mm-hmm. The other thing is like obviously just following trends and making fun content based off of like the trending audio or getting ahead of trends. Like if you see something happen and you think it's going to be a trend, like making sure that you're like ahead of the curve and you're not coming in at the end of the trend when people are like, I'm bored. The other thing is that you know, getting, you can get really creative with it. You don't need to have like high production value. So like you can do, you can just have fun with your products at home. And consistency, like as long as you're consistent with TikTok and as long as you're like putting out the content and reviewing your analytics and figuring out like what people are connecting to and stuff like that, like you'll grow and you'll make an impact on TikTok. And at some point it's just, it'll click and it'll work and you'll have a great following and be able to probably drive revenue from it.
That's cool. So it's just like anything, you've got to be consistent with it as well. On average, how many posts a week do you think it'd be a valuable sort of starting point to look at?
That's a good question. So I think it's like 3 posts a day right now.
Oh, wow.
I know, I'm building one of our accounts and we're putting out 3 pieces of content a day. But again, like on my personal account, I just put out a video. I never put out content on my personal stuff. I just put out a video and it's got like 12,000 likes. It's got like 400,000 views on it. And that's like the only piece of content that I put out. So yeah, it's like one of those things where you're like, kind of like if you can get it right and you can get that viral content out there, you won't need to put out a ton. Yeah. Like, as long as you can focus on like figuring out what that is. But at the same time, it's like really hard to figure out what is that piece of viral content. Like you never really know what's going to take off on TikTok. So yeah, it doesn't really answer that question, but like, I'd say just explore your own brand and explore kind of like what your users are engaging with.
Yeah. You know, creating content, I've always found to be the hardest thing to sort of figure out. And I know that you can have content pillars and sort of content calendars and schedules and so on. Let's talk a little bit about content pillars and themes. Sort of where do you start when you're sitting down with a client to sort of figure out what those pillars or themes are to sort of start to generate different pieces of content?
I guess it depends on the brand and their objectives, but essentially where it all begins is the branding sheet that we provide for our clients. So it's like a list of questionnaires that talks about your brand, your goals, what your product is, the features, benefits, like, you know, all of the traditional mumbo jumbo about branding. But we take all of that and we do like a deep dive of competitors and like what they're doing and what market trends are. And then what the audience is looking for. And based off of the audience and like the entire industry, we sit down and map out like around 4 content pillars, depending on, you know, the brand itself, but they usually fall into specific buckets. And like one of them's information. One of them might be just like strictly engagement posts, like, you know, doing a repost of like a funny meme or a GIF or whatever. There's information about your brand itself, like sales promotional type posts. Mm-hmm. What was the fourth one I was going to say? Education, engagement, information, and promotional. Yeah. So those are 4, but yeah. Perfect. So those are like the 4 pillars, but yeah, it all depends on the brand and like, there could be more, there could be less, it could be different. You might need more engagement. You know, it's hard to really tell until you examine what the brand is and industry trends, but.
That's awesome. So then, you know, once you've got your content pillars and themes worked out and you've got a content calendar, so you can sort of figure out how frequently you want to post, then I guess you've got to pick the element that you're going to utilize to deliver that information into to your audience's hands. So mm-hmm. You mentioned before, you know, email platforms are really taking off. You're obviously a huge expert and probably advocate for blogging. You've got your website, you've got Instagram, Facebook ads, and then you've got TikTok. Now there's a huge amount of, you know, various channels that you can utilize. You said at the conference that you went to the other day that everybody was talking about TikTok, Facebook ads, and the email platform. Would you specifically tend to sort of lean on those 3, or is there another one in particular that you're a huge advocate for?
Yeah, usually, if a client wants the full shebang, it usually encompasses social media, which can be, you know, that could also include influencer marketing, TikTok, LinkedIn, like all of the channels, Google ads, Facebook ads, email marketing, and blogging. And then like YouTube, I don't know if I'd put that in the social category or a category of its own, because it has its own like search engine. But you know, YouTube, Pinterest, these types of, I guess they're social in a sense, but they're also like, they're also their own like world, but we do a lot of that as well. So those are usually the bulk of like a marketing strategy, I'd say.
It encompasses everything really, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's crazy in that. And I mean, when I say it's crazy to think that there is so much opportunity to get in front of the audience these days. And to get in front of the right person, as you know, is really critical, because I mean, you can speak out there and, you know, you could land in front of hundreds of eyeballs or ears, but whether they're actually your target audience is another thing. So how do you ensure that you're getting in front of the right person to start with?
Like understanding who that person is, I think, is the best place to start. Yep. Because if you don't have a clear understanding of like who or where they are. And this is one of the biggest things when I'm doing these branding exercises to start a client off, is the answers are always like, can often be very generic, like health and wellness. I'm just looking for people who want healthy food.
Yeah.
That's not really an audience. Like your audience is a vegan female who also follows these other brands and reads these magazines and watches these TV shows. And, you know, like they have this like mass bubble of interests. And when you can define what those interests are and like where they are going to be, then you can define where you should also be, which is also a part of TikTok. Like if your audience isn't there, or they're just getting there, like if your audience is late millennial, yeah, maybe you don't have to rush to be on the platform, but it's something that you should think about. However, like, you know, knowing where those people are and making sure that you can show up in the same capacity, like it definitely helps.
Yeah, that's cool. So, you know, we were talking before about how an entrepreneur that's, you know, deep in the weeds of getting their business up and running is spread really, really thin. How many hours a week do you think it sort of takes to sort of get the ball rolling on a social media and content strategy?
Our strategies are about 10 hours of like actual legwork to put a strategy together.
Yep.
And then for like the minimal amount of social media work per week, I would say it's anywhere between like 5 to 10 hours a week. So it's
a solid day. It's a solid day a week. Yeah. And what majority of, well, what, how would you sort of split that time up? Would it be, you know, the creation of the content or the scheduling, or how would you sort of divide up that 8 to 10 hours?
I'd put a chunk of that aside for content creation, to make things so much easier on yourself. Like if you're going to do your own socials or your own content development, like making sure that you put everything in like a 30-day calendar, figuring out what those topics are, maybe like give yourself some guideline on what you want that visual content to look like, just kind of mapping out what that process looks like and how many pieces of content you actually need for the month. And then putting together the visuals, then the copy, get everything auto scheduled. But so that takes a chunk of time. And then the other chunk of time that some people often forget about is that you also have to engage with your community, and you have to be on your social networks, especially Instagram, making sure that you're like talking to your audience and watching their stories and responding to their stuff and like going on to your stories. This, I think this is awesome for like food brands specifically, behind the scenes stuff, like popping into your stories every single day. If you're in the if you're in your factory or warehouse or whatever, and you're putting together your product, like showing your audience like behind the scenes of what actually goes into your food brand, your product, whatever, especially in the health and wellness space, because it is so important to show like the integrity behind food. So making sure you're doing that and engaging with your audience, it also takes a huge chunk of time. So that's kind of like how you weigh out where to put your energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great investment in time, that's for sure. And I'm sure that, you know, it would be well and good to have that intention of, you know, getting that 8 to 10 hour day sort of just like locked down to create all of the content and map it all out. But I'm sure that it'd be equally spread over the course of a week, like you said, in the engagement as well. Now, we were just talking about Erica before and how successful she's been with sort of seeing some growth of her channels and how that sort of translated into direct sales, which was really cool. And like I said, I found her on LinkedIn, or she came up in my LinkedIn feed, and I've been following her, and it's been really great. One of the things that I really like about her content is she actually does show you behind the scenes as well. So you feel as if you're a part of the business and you're seeing some of the success that she's seeing in her growth and how she celebrates. It's really cool. Are there any other sort of people out there that you enjoy watching that that other people should get onto?
So yeah, I actually found Brodo on Instagram, and yep. Awesome. Smart Sweets is a really great brand, and the owner of Smart Sweets also does the same. Like, I think she has her own personal account where you can like go and engage with her and follow her journey, her entrepreneurial path. I work closely with a brand called Nuts for Cheese. They're amazing. Margaret she's actually from London, Ontario as well. Yep. And she's built this phenomenal plant-based cheese company that tastes good. Like,
yeah, I've sampled it before. She was out at a trade show, the CHFA West trade show. It would have been it would be 2 years now, because last year was canceled because of COVID. And I sampled her cheese then. And you're right, it's absolutely delicious. I was really impressed as well.
Yeah. And she's just like the sweetest person, like so honest and humble, and just like an amazing person altogether. Midday Squares is like killing it.
They're blowing up as well. They were at the same trade show. Their booth was right opposite the one that I was in. So they fueled us with chocolate bars and we fueled them with coffee. It was a good trade.
Yeah. A lot of amazing Canadian based brands are like just hitting the scene and doing amazing work. And it's just really inspiring to see.
Yeah, they're a fun bunch as well. They look like they're having fun every day. And I love that you can sort of follow that journey too. And they just, I think they just got another advisor on board. I've forgotten his name now. It'll come to me by the end of the podcast. But they're rapidly growing and seeing some success, which is cool.
I think they're opening up an IPO. So you can buy stocks to a company, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you're right. They are. I saw that on LinkedIn. Awesome. Tell us a little about the analytics side of the business. Now, I know that it's probably pretty involved and you could go pretty deep on it, but just give us sort of a surface level on where you start to look when looking at the numbers and sort of how to figure what content is working, what content to sort of focus on for future posts, and sort of what ones to sort of put by the wayside.
Right. So Instagram, you can pop into your insights, and I would recommend doing it maybe not daily because you might not want to obsess about it, but like weekly for sure, or biweekly. And what we usually do is do light analytic reporting at the end of the week to try and figure out, like, because a lot of our clients, we work on a week-to-week basis. A lot of people need things like on the fly. So we map it out the previous week and then run it for the following week. So, social media managers all work differently, and that might change in our process in the future, but that's what we do for now. So at the end of the week, we kind of like figure out what worked last week and what didn't really work. And then you kind of build content based off of what's working. And with Instagram, it's just super easy. You could just pop in maybe on a Friday, carve out 15 minutes, just go over your posts and think, don't look at the likes per se, look at the actual engagement metrics, which are comments, shares. You know, if you're in your Instagram stories and you're using the stickers, like how many people responded to those stickers, how many conversations were started, the likes, just like, I know they matter. And I know like we all, it's kind of one of those vanity metrics. It's like, yeah, our likes and followers matter so much, but at the same time, it's like, what really matters is like the back end conversations that you're having, the customer relationships that you're building, and that community that's going to keep coming back for more. So making sure that you're looking at the engagement side of things rather than, you know, your analytics on likes and follows. And that's kind of what we do. Just like every week, look at every single post and just kind of figure out like, hey, this worked, this didn't. Same with, I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about Facebook. I don't know if anybody really cares to talk about Facebook anymore, but with ads, like if we're talking ads, then you're constantly optimizing to make sure that your return on investment, your cost per click, all of those things are low, as low as possible as you can get it. And then if you have content out there that is objective based, like you're driving a conversion, whether it's a sign up to your email list or a purchase conversion, checking those metrics as well to make sure that, you know, if it's not working, then figuring out why it's not working. Like, why didn't people sign up to it? Maybe test it another way, maybe try a different opt-in or lead magnet or sale or whatever. And yeah, I think those are the top ones.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, when people invest in marketing, they really want to know what that return on that marketing expense is going to be. And I know that in a lot of ways, it's really hard to sort of show with plain and simple numbers what the conversions are and how it translates into growth of the business or in, you know, revenue generated. I can imagine that with, you know, social media sort of marketing strategies and so on, even though you are pumping dollars into that strategy, especially when working with an agency like yourself, how do you track an ROI on something like that?
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing ads or you have, like, we use Shopify. So if we have our Shopify connected to Google Ads or Shopify merch or Google Merchant, you can track those sales, but it's not, nothing is so trackable anymore. Even ads, because like I said before, that customer journey has changed so much. People aren't just going on Facebook and purchasing unless they've already seen that content before. So it is just really hard. I think the best way to understand whether or not your marketing is working is like just sales and growth in general. And then figuring out, like, you'll get the numbers. So you can get the numbers of likes, engagements in your email signups, whatever, right? So you have those numbers. If they are growing and with those numbers, your revenue is growing, like, that's good. Something's working. If your Facebook ads, you can track a certain degree of revenue from your remarketing. But like, it's a funnel, right? So email marketing, if you're using something like Klaviyo, it's a really, really great e-commerce-based email marketing tool. You can track your revenue per email or per funnel that you set up. So like, there are different elements that you can track. And I think that like, the more money you spend on conversion-based marketing, so whether it's a Facebook ad, a Google ad, or email, you can, but the overall picture is really hard to track. So especially if you're using influencers, like, that is like another world, because you have to rely on their metrics and like, do they know?
So it's more of the approach of like working with your marketing budget, maximizing your marketing budget, and then testing whether, if you add, you know, an extra 10% to that budget, how does that influence growth, and sort of just playing around with the numbers in that respect.
Actually, that's a really good point. Like, a lot of people start, or a lot of brands start with a base, you know, marketing budget, and it's always scalable. So your ads manager should be able to say, look, I can get you a 1-4 ROI or 1-10 ROI. I don't know if we're being like adventurous, but, and if your ads manager on Facebook or Google can hit those numbers, then you pump in more money into that because something is working. And from there it's scalable. But with more traffic to your website comes more social clicks, comes more, you know, all around. It hopefully just starts to work.
Snowballs. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Awesome. That was great information. Thank you all for that. Tell us a little bit about your food photography, because on your website, you're showcasing so much of it and it's beautiful. And I love great photography like that because it's so versatile and you can use it across so many different mediums as well. So where did you get into the food photography specifically?
So that was back in the blogging days, in the product promotion days.
Right.
I actually don't do a lot of it myself anymore. I've hired better photographers than what I can do, just as my team grows, and hopefully the level of quality that we can put out into the world grows. But I do still do recipe development. So when working with like health and wellness brands, especially if it's an ingredient, that is still a huge component of what I love to do. And that's actually how it all started. So I'd still love to maintain that certain degree, but when it comes to like product photography, I have an amazing photographer on my team. She's just a wonderful asset. So yeah, we're kind of like this tight knit little, like, do it all.
That's awesome. How big is your team? How many people do you have on board?
Five, six. Two ads managers, two social media managers, and a photographer.
And you're advertising for another two right now, I see. Some part-time jobs.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was looking for social media managers to to join. So
that's awesome. Hey, tell us, what's the difference between a content manager and a social media manager?
A content manager, I think that you'll find in the world of content management, they are talking specifically about SEO and blogging,
right.
Whereas social media is directly related to the social media channels. Yep. We just do it all.
Yeah, I love it. I really recommend anybody jump on the Social Wellness Code website and have a look around. I spent a bit of time on it yesterday, just getting my head around exactly what it is that Jenny does. And I was really impressed because, Jenny, you got it mapped out so clearly, and it's to be expected because this is your livelihood. But yeah, and then I really love the way that you generate content out on LinkedIn, because I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit, both because of my job and because of the podcast as well. And you've got a great presence there and you're constantly interacting with people as well. And yeah, hats off to you, because you seem to be doing a great job and it's evident that you love what you do, which is lucky that you've found it, you know?
Thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. I've learned a bunch, and I'm sure the listeners have found this conversation extremely valuable as well. If anybody would like to connect with you and engage with your business, what would be the best way to get in touch?
You can send an email to hello@socialwellnessco.com or DM on Instagram. Those are the two spots that I am the most.
Great. Well, look, thank you very much for your time. Genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you.
No worries, Jenny. Bye. Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram @thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.